This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Jordan's Furniture, Bing Y World Class Market, Brennan Smoke Shop, Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC and Electric, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Advanced Auto Parts, U.S. Marker Board, Boston Volkswagen, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmower, Foxwoods Resort Casino, Jackson Lumber, and Mass General Cancer Center.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Stays up. Mookie Betts is there. And the Red Sox have won. Final score is 7-3 tonight as they split the series from the Detroit Tigers.
So I personally am not in the business of celebrating splits. Splits at home against the Detroit Tigers. Four games, the Red Sox lose the first two in a doubleheader. They win the last two, 11-4, two nights ago, I think the final was, 11-3, 11-4, something like that. And then, obviously, last night they win again, 7-3, I believe, was your final over at Fenway Park last night. It's hard to keep all the numbers straight sometimes. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. So, if you want to talk about your baseball team, now is your chance, and I know there are those of you out there who do want to talk baseball. I asked Felger this at the end of the afternoon show just a little while ago because I was curious. How did the Red Sox do on TV last night? Because, boy, as far as the Red Sox are concerned, tough time of year. Celtics are getting ready to play the Bucks. They weren't playing last night, but they're getting ready for the second round of the playoffs. Bruins opened against the Columbus Blue Jackets. They had two games this week. And the door is open for the Bruins to make a run to the Cup Final, at the very least. Meanwhile, the Patriots are in the draft. They selected a wide receiver at number 32, and they have five more picks tonight in the draft. In rounds 2 and 3, the Patriots have five more selections. And yet the Red Sox did a pretty decent TV rating last night. They were in the 4.5 range, I think he said, which is pretty good given the level of competition, given the way they've played, and given the time of year. Okay, so 617-779-0984. They still have not won a home series. What do you get?
98.5.
Did I say 98.4?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I did that about 10 years ago. It came back. It was a little glitch. 98.5. What a jackass I am. 617-779-0988. Murray? 5-0-98-5. There you go. Lines are open. So I'm not celebrating a four-game split against the Detroit Tigers. Let's not get too geeked up about it. However, if you were watching that game last night, I think there was a reason to be optimistic about, there's more than one reason to be optimistic about where the Red Sox are heading here as April draws to a close. And again, we'll see whether it carries over because we know these series openers are difficult. They have Josh Smith pitching tonight against Charlie Morton. I couldn't tell you who Josh Smith is. I don't know anything about him. Maybe one of you guys could fill me in and let me know.
Yeah, 31 years old, making his first appearance on an active Major League roster, Maz.
Okay, stop there right now. 31 tells me he sucks and that he's a journeyman and they're taking a flyer on him, so keep going.
First time on a Major League roster since 2017. This Florida native made his Major League debut in 2015 with the Reds. He's 5-8 with a 5.30 earned run average and 67 career major league appearances with 9 starts between the Reds and the A's.
Okay. So Joe Smith blows, which is fitting.
Josh.
Whatever. Joe Smith, Josh Smith's the same. The name's perfect because he's a nobody. Completely anonymous. And you're going against Charlie Morton. So if you could ever win a game like this, then you have Price and Sale going over the next two. Like the idea of that, of being able to win that game, I like. Now, back to the Tigers series. What happened last night was noteworthy for me for this reason, on multiple levels. The Red Sox went ahead in this game 2-0 in the second inning. Okay, they went ahead 2-0 in the second inning. Michael Chavis hit a 2-run homer into the monster seats, and we'll get to Chavis in the next segment, but Chavis has made an impact here in the early going. Beyond that, they then went into the third, the Red Sox did, after taking a 2-0 lead. So they win the night before. They get 7 runs in the 8th inning. They come out, they get 2 in the second. They're right ahead. They're ahead right away. And then you know what Rick Porcello did? Rick Porcello goes into the 3rd inning and immediately gives it all back. It took him like no time at all. Okay, gave up a double to Jacoby Jones on the, I believe it was the first pitch. And then on the second pitch to, I'm going to mispronounce this, Candelario. Is it Jimer or Heimer? Candelario. He then singled. Jones scored. So now it's 2-1. And then on the second pitch to Castellanos, gave up a two-run homer off a pesky pole. So all told, it took five pitches, I think, for Rick Porcello to blow that lead. They went from 2-0 to down 3-2 in five pitches. And I was watching the game at that stage because the Bruins were just about to start. I was clicking back and forth. And I remember thinking to myself, the Bruins had already started. I was clicking back and forth and thinking to myself, this is unbelievable. The Red Sox had a 2-0 lead, and Porcello goes out and spits up on himself again. And Porcello in the early part of the year has been garbage. Garbage. So the Red Sox come to bat in the bottom of the third, and by this stage I had switched back to the Bruins. Betts doubled to left, Moreland walked, J.D. Martinez singled, and now the game's tied at 3-3. 3-3, so you've bailed out Porcello and even the score again. One out in the third inning. And then what I think was the pivotal sequence of the game happened. It sounded like this.
He'll serve that one to Beckham. Anna Harrison got the out on to first and not in time. Moreland safely down to third with two down.
Thank goodness didn't hit it quite hard enough. They just couldn't turn it. Stay out of that double play. Keep this inning going.
And the veteran with a 3-2. There's a shot out to left field, back toward the wall. That's going to catch the green. One run in. It comes Bogarts. He's rounding third. He's going to score. Devers clings him off. RBI's numbers 6 and 7 for Raphael. And the Red Sox in front again, 5-3.
Okay, so just like that, it turned. Just like that, it turned. Xander Bogarts is the guy that hit what could have been a double break grounded to shortstop. And it wasn't super hard hit. Here's the part that Eck and Dave O'Brien did not talk about on the broadcast. Bogarts, as usual, humped it down the line. He got down there pretty well. He gets home to first. I mean, he's pretty good at getting home to first, especially for a guy out of the right-handed batter's box. I mean, if guys that run out of that right-handed box, I don't want to say Bogarts is as good as I've ever seen because there were guys that are faster. Rocco Baldelli, if you remember him, could fly. He was really fast out of the right-handed box. Jeter was always good getting down the line. Bogarts, for a Red Sox hitter, right-handed hitter out of the box, home to first, Bogarts is as good as any Red Sox player I've seen. Okay, and consistently gives the effort. So he beats the double play. He beats the double play. The inning's still alive. You've still got two guys on, first and third. Rafael Devers comes up and gets ahead in the count 3-0. And then you know what happened? Cora gave him the green light. And Devers fouled the pitch off. But I thought it was noteworthy because Cora starting to manage a little more aggressively again. First and third, two outs. You just tied the game and stayed out of a double play. Devers has been hot. He's been especially hot in the last week. He doesn't have any home runs, but he's hit for average in the last week. And in the last 2 weeks, he's hit for average. It's over 300 with an OPS in the 800s. So you know what Cora did? He greened him up. Then, as I said, Devers fouled off the 3-0 pitch. He fouled off 3-1, which would have been ball four. So now you're sort of saying, well, they'd have the bases loaded here if Devers hadn't swung. It didn't matter. He ends up smacking a double off the wall. Two runs score. Now the Red Sox are ahead 5-3. So just think of the turn right there. Right there. Red Sox could have been down 3-2 if Bogarts doesn't hump it down the line and kill the double play. But because he does and the ball wasn't hard hit, I'm not telling you it was the greatest hustle play of all time because the ball was a bit of a bouncer. But nonetheless, no two gets turned. So the Red Sox escape the double play. Cora greens up Devers on 3-0, and then Devers hits one off the wall, and now you've gone from down 3-2 to up 5-3. Rick Porcello sort of gets back on the beam. He ends up going 6. You win 7-3, and I don't know, an inning like that, call me crazy, an inning like that makes me feel like maybe they're starting to turn a little. Maybe they're starting to turn. Bogarts hustles a play out. In other words, it wasn't just as simple as someone hitting a 3-run homer in the 9th inning. It was the third inning. Bogarts ran a play out, a little thing. Alex Cora greens up Rafael Devers on 3-0, a little thing. Devers misses the pitch, then swings at a bad one, but doesn't give away the at-bat and hits one off the wall. little things, a little more fight, being able to answer after your pitcher blew the lead. That third inning last night, that third inning, the top was demoralizing. The bottom was really encouraging. And we'll get to more on the Red Sox, too. I'm going to get to Chavis and Porcello, but we'll take your calls first. We'll kick it off tonight with Pat, who's in the car. Pat, what do you got?
You know, well, let's start with what I think their problems are this year.
By all means, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, start with whatever you want.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just think that they get in such a happy one. If I remember correctly, Porcello was one of the ones that was jumping in and out of the tub there they had in the locker room. I think they all just partied there. And you know what's off this summer and almost forgot how to play baseball, and now they're starting to get the rhythm going again. But I want to hang over, call what you want. They're just slow getting to the punch, and I think once they can put it all together, they might be able to have something again.
Okay, so look, Pat, there's too much talent on that team for them to suck. I think we all felt that. There's too much talent, and there's no question they weren't ready to go. The question is, where was the starting line, and when were they going to start to look like themselves again? And we all thought it was the weekend series in Tampa, and it may have been. They went in there and they won three games and they had to fight for them. Then they came home and they blew a doubleheader against the Tigers. And you sit there and you say, well, here you go. One step up, two steps back. Same old Red Sox. Here we go. When are they going to get out of it? But they did come back and win the last two. And so I looked at the whole thing, and that third inning last night meant something to me. I'm sorry. I don't mean to put too much emphasis on a third inning rally on April 25th, but they had just blown the lead in the span of five or six pitches on a home run that hit the foul pole in right field, and that sort of exemplified how their year is gone. You're going to lose three out of four to the flipping Tigers? That's what you're going to do? And they bounce back in the bottom half of the inning. And they did it by beating out a double play ball, taking a shot on 3-0, and then having a good at-bat even after a mistake was made in the middle of it. Because, again, Devers swung at ball four and fouled it off. So I liked what I saw in that inning. I thought, okay, there you go. And then they stabilized. Once they had the lead, they stabilized, which was a good sign. Now, that said, oh, boy, were the Red Sox slow to the punch this year. Boy, were they ever. Which brings us to Michael Chavis and Rick Porcello, which we're going to get to in the next two segments. Because both of those guys are worth talking about today, albeit for different reasons. We'll get to them next. 617-779-0985. Is your
BackstageCountry.com your online home for all things country music? Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Uh-oh. There's a high fly ball driven deep to left field, headed for the wall, and that is gone. Right into the light standard area. Chavis with number two to put the Red Sox in front, 2-0.
Michael Chavis strikes again. Two-run home run last night puts the Red Sox up 2-0. Contributes to another victory. They win 7-3. Chavis played second base last night again. He was replaced by Zhu Weilin late in the game for defensive reasons, but no mistakes. And again, I didn't see the whole game. I was watching the Bruins and bouncing around in the draft, so I admit all of that stuff. But in the little bit I've seen of Chavis, he's not a complete butcher in the field. For someone who's never really played the position, I think he played five games in the minor leagues. They brought him up. He turned a double play in Tampa. And there was a double play, apparently. I was talking to Chris Gasper about this earlier in the day. There was a double play in Tampa that they did not turn where Chavis fed Bogarts. And Gasper said he thought Bogarts was slow on the turn. It's possible that the timing of the feed was off from Chavis. I'll see if I can go back and find it. But the point is that if it was a speed thing, I think that that can come with repetition. Watching him play second base, he doesn't feel like a complete butcher to me. And by comparison's sake, here's what I would say to you. Do you remember Yoan Moncada when he came up and the Red Sox put him at third?
He played like six or eight games, and he was a complete nightmare.
He was a butcher. At third base in particular, I think he's playing second for the White Sox. But I looked at him and said, this kid can't play the position. In fact, he was so bad there that I remember thinking, you got to trade this guy. You can't. Now, look, he's going off so far for the White Sox. He's having a good year. But he was a big part of the deal that got you Chris Sale. So, but I don't look at Chavis and see someone as bad as Moncada was. So the point is, I don't think he has as far to travel. Does he have the agility, the footwork to play second base? I don't know. But again, so far, no errors, no real glaring mistakes that I can think of. So I'll take it with Chavis. And you know what? Even when Holt is ready to come back, and Nunez is ready to come back and play on a more regular basis, hell, even Pedroia, because I don't think Pedroia is going to hold up, and I think you screw up your roster by having him active. And I love Pedroia. We all do. I love him to death. But you just can't, have a guy on your roster that playing second base that you have to constantly manage. So you know what? Matt McCarthy's in the control room tonight. Matt McCarthy does the Hardcore Baseball podcast on 98.5thesportshub.com. Let me ask Matt real quick. What do you think of Chavis?
I think he can play. And to your point, Tony, second base in the big leagues now, you don't really need somebody who can play there defensively. Think about all the shifting that's gone on in baseball. You don't really need anybody to turn double plays the way you used to, because he can't go into second base hard now, thanks to the Chase Utley rule. It looks to me like he can play, and okay. I'll take the bat. I will at that position right now.
Okay, so before you go on, and I hope you're not cheating by looking, what if I asked you right now what his batting average was? What would you say?
It's probably not great, but he's got pop.
Okay, so here's what his batting average is, and thank you, Matt. Chavis is hitting .222. But boy, it feels like he's having an impact, doesn't it? Like, I look at that and I say .222. Murray, if I said to you someone's batting average was .222, like, I think instinctively you'd say, well, he's hit some home runs. His OPS might be in the 700s.
I'd say he's a hack.
Okay. This kid's OPS is over 1,000. Because he's walked a bunch. He's hit, so his on base is .391. And this may or may not, the numbers may or may not mean anything to people, but .391 is a damn good on base. So he's got four walks and four hits. He's been on base eight times, and of his four hits, two are homers, one's a double. And he has struck out a bunch. So you know what Michael Chavis is? He's the modern player who either homers, strikes out,
or walks.
Those three true outcomes that the stat geeks love. Okay, those three true outcomes, because he's a predictable player. His OPS is over 1,000, and he hasn't been a butcher in the field. I'm not telling he's a gold glover, because he's not. But he's not a butcher. I think you keep playing him. And I think the Red Sox could use the offense. I mean, to me, that I would absolutely keep playing Chavis. I don't know how you take him out, frankly.
Maz, an update on tonight's game. It has been rained out. There's going to be a day-night doubleheader that takes place on June 8th.
On June 8th. So only two games this weekend.
Correct.
So Josh Smith, we hardly knew ye. Is that his name, Josh?
Josh Smith, yeah.
Josh Smith. So they'll ship his ass out now because they don't need him anymore. Price goes tomorrow. Sale goes on Sunday, and the Red Sox can build on the momentum. So there you go. Again, tonight's Red Sox game postponed on account of rain until June 8th.
Took him long enough.
Yeah, no kidding. Ben's on Rhode Island. Ben, what do you got?
Hey, Tony Bologna. I got a little theory for you I want to run by you. I feel like the Red Sox have a bit of a problem knowing when to let guys go. To compare it to the Patriots, it seems like Bill always knows the perfect right time when to let a player go. And it feels like the Red Sox, I don't know if it's for sort of like emotional connection or what, bring a guy back a year or two too long. This year, it seems to me like Steve Pierce is the example. This guy could have kind of rode off into the sunset, a Red Sox hero. And now we got him back doing the platoon thing with Moreland. It seems like a little too long. But even going back to, like, the Josh Beckett extension, do you think ownership puts pressure on the, like, GMs and decision makers of the Red Sox to bring back the guys that the fans love?
So, Ben, look, it's an interesting question, but honestly, I don't think they do, no. Because the fans love Jacoby Ellsbury, and they let him go. And, God, you guys loved Ellsbury, like, ridiculously. And I say you guys. I don't know if you were one of them. But my pal Danny and Quincy is still lamenting the fact that Ellsbury's gone. And let me tell you, since he left, Ellsbury has sucked. Okay? I was right on Ellsbury, and so were the Red Sox. I didn't want Ellsbury back, and neither did they. So, now, are there times? Yeah, I guess. Honestly, I wouldn't put Steve Pierce on the list. Steve Pierce is a $6 million player. It's a one-year deal. I'd put Nathan Eovaldi on that list before I put Steve Pierce on the list. So if you want to tell me sometimes that, you know, do they overreact to a player's performance late in the year or in October? Sure. Again, Eovaldi is Exhibit 1A, for crying out loud. Like, Eovaldi, the contract was grossly inflated from the start. But again, many fans wanted him back, too. I wanted him back. I thought the contract was absolutely stupid. And I don't mean that they were stupid to do it. I mean, the contract is ridiculous. That's what I mean. Ridiculous contract for Nathan Eovaldi and a player of that ability. Now, that said, when you say the Red Sox hold on to guys too long, at the moment, what are their options? They don't have anybody coming in the system. There are no players down there. Who have they held on to too long that you say, well, they shouldn't have brought that guy back this year? Like, Price was coming back. That was his choice. Sale was under contract. They re-signed him in the spring. I'd have waited until the end of the year on Sale. And ultimately, I think he's going to be okay this year, but let's see. Eovaldi, I hated the contract. But the reality is, if they didn't spend the money on the guys they spent it on, they were going to spend it on someone else because they have no players coming through the system. None. This is why David Price called him the 30th ranked system in baseball when he was talking about the fact that they could be sellers at the deadline. They need to replenish that minor league system. Quickly, Brendan in Winchester. You got to go fast, Brendan.
Yeah, you said the stats for Chavis were off the charts, but isn't it a little bit too early?
Absolutely, it's early. No question. I'm just telling you, who would you rather see at second base?
Exactly. So,
Yeah, I'm going to let you go, Brennan. Again, I don't understand whether, I don't know if Chavis can play or not either. I'm just telling you that what I've seen so far, I'll take the offense at the position. I'll take the occasional home run and the walk. You know, he rifled the ball off the center field wall in Tampa to help trigger a rally there. He's hit a long home run and now a liner into the left field seats last night. I'll take it. I'm not getting that out of Pedroia. I don't think I'm getting it out of Nunez, and I'm not getting it out of Holt. So I'll take a shot. I'll take my chances that they can get something out of the kid. And if he goes into a tailspin, I send him back because he's got options. You can do that. Jim Murray's got your headlines when we come back. Do not underestimate what has been the key element in the Red Sox, quote-unquote, turning it around here a little bit. And I don't want to go too far with that. But really, this also speaks to their approach in spring training and where they made a mistake. We'll get to that next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporter. Tony Maserati, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, I'd love to tell you I have some magic formula for a team success that nobody knows, but the baseball formulas, more often than not, are very traditional, very simple, very basic. No major secrets in baseball. Okay, they've been playing the game too long. The reason for the Red Sox turnaround, we'll get to that in just 1 second here. I should say the primary reason for the Red Sox turnaround, we'll get to it in 1 second. But Roger in a car wants to talk about a player who's causing a lot of buzz in baseball today. Go ahead, Roger. What do you got?
Yeah, Miz, I just want to hear your thoughts and maybe predictions for tonight. I mean, as a baseball fan, it excites me to see this guy debut. But
okay, so Roger, why don't you tell everybody first? Tell everybody who you're talking about first.
Oh, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., of course.
Okay.
And I think it could go. I think it could go either way. The dude just swings his back out and goes for all strikeouts tonight, or hits two bombs. What do you think?
Okay, so look, I'm not gonna. I mean, I couldn't begin to tell you what he's gonna do. Obviously, he can mash. So Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for the Toronto Blue Jays will make his debut tonight. I think they're playing the Angels in Anaheim, right?
No, they're at home.
They're at home against the Angels.
In fact, they've been. It's really just gone viral here in the last 40 minutes. His batting practice. He's been hitting balls off the hotel windows inside the Sky Dome.
Okay, but the opponent is the Angels.
The
only reason I ask is because his old man Vlad Sr. finished his career with the Angels, if I'm not mistaken. So it just lined up right. I think Vladimir Sr.'s
Oakland. They're taking on Oakland.
Okay, they're playing Oakland. My mistake. So I thought it was the Angels. In any case, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is causing a stir because he absolutely crushes the ball. Murray, have you seen any pictures of him? You just said you saw a video, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, I'd seen him before. Because wasn't there some story about
him? He doesn't look like he's missed many meals, does he?
No. He looks like he ate his dad. But wasn't there some story behind this? There was some controversy that they didn't have him ready to go at the beginning of the season because
there was a
financial aspect to it, right? Like
indeed,
the team kind of screwed him by not having him ready on game one.
Correct. Service time is what they did to Chris Bryant.
Yeah, I hate this kind of crap.
They being the Cubs.
Okay, so and I'm willing to bet that this comes up in the next collective bargaining agreement between baseball owners and players. But by delaying his debut until Friday, the Blue Jays ensure that Guerrero's maximum service time this year would be 157 days, 15 days short of being eligible for free agency after the 2024 season. Okay? So what this does is allow them to keep Guerrero for an extra season. In baseball, you're eligible after 6 years, and anything over 172 is considered a full season. I think they're actually 182 or 183 days in the baseball calendar. The season, the actual playing season, but anything over 172 is considered a full year. So the Jays held this guy out until now so that he this won't count as a full season, and then they keep him for six more after this one. Okay, the Cubs did something similar with Chris Bryant, if you remember, and this sort of thing comes up all the time. It's a weaselly move, Murray. It is. It's a weaselly move.
It's dirty.
And so what it does is it's teams manipulating the system, which is why, to me, they need to do something about this. You shouldn't be able to get, 135 games out of a guy and not call it a full year.
Well, not only that, for a team that's middling and not expected to do much, that probably doesn't have a lot of buzz around it in Toronto, like, wouldn't you want to start your season with a kid that's the number one prospect in baseball? And
no question.
But if you're Toronto, you're looking long-term. This guy's going to bolt as soon as he can.
Okay, so look, I think this whole thing needs some sort of modification, and I'm not looking for fans to offer solutions tonight because we all know how that goes. But Guerrero's making his debut. The kid can absolutely hack. Be nice if he got himself into shape a little bit. His defense is a huge question. A little like his old man at the end. And his father could throw. But his father was he might have won a gold glove somewhere in there. By the time I saw him, I thought he was a bit of a butcher in the outfield and didn't move very well. But when he was young, at least, Vlad Sr. could run. He stole bases. This kid looks huge. Absolutely ginormous.
I thought he was from the Fielder family initially.
I mean, he does. He looks like that. He looks like Cecil or Prince Fielder. He's absolutely fat. He's ginormous.
That swing looks like his dad's, though.
Okay, yeah, he'll swing at anything, too, from what I understand. I saw a little bit of him in spring training, highlights of him during spring training. He hacks. There's no two ways about it, and he crushes the ball. So, I don't know. It's a fun, it's always fun to watch a young guys in Major League Baseball. So, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., makes his debut tonight in the major leagues for the Blue Jays against the Oakland A's. As it pertains to the Red Sox, I said Rick Porcello last night, the key to this whole little burst for the Red Sox going 5-2 now in their last seven games, it's not rocket science. It's starting pitching. So let's go back to the finale of the Yankee series, which the Red Sox ended up losing when Brett Gardner hit the grand slam, if you remember. But Nathan Eovaldi pitched well that night, and they should have won that game. They did not, but he pitched well. Beginning that night, Red Sox starters have a 3.46 ERA in seven starts. That does not include Hector Velasquez. Okay, I threw him out because Velasquez isn't really part of your rotation. But the other guys, Eovaldi, Rodriguez, Porcello, Price, Sale, and then Rodriguez and Porcello again. Those guys have now made seven turns collectively, allowed 15 earned runs for a 3.46 ERA. And during that time, the Red Sox have started to win games. Is that, should that really shock anybody? Because again, and you know what? I'm not even telling you they've been great. They've just been decent. They haven't sucked. It just goes to show you how bad the starting pitching was early in the year. And more importantly, I also think it tells you exactly how far the Red Sox went in screwing up. And when I say that, I mean, the Red Sox have played 26 games now. Is that what you said, Matt McCarthy? 26? Is that right? 26 games. Only in the last seven starts have the Red Sox really started to come around, which means their starting pitchers weren't ready for 19 games. 3 weeks. They were 3 weeks behind everybody else in spring training, which is consistent with basically the math you would do in terms of how they wanted to start the year. Nah, you know, we'll back them up a little bit so they really don't start to hit stride until about 3 weeks in. Our first 3 weeks of the year are going to be extended spring training. And it bit them in the ass. Like clockwork, 3 weeks in, they started to pitch better. Like clockwork. We'll give you the DraftKings fantasy pick of the night and wrap it up with your calls next.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Maserati, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
How about Steve Pierce?
This is why the Red Sox believe that Steve Pierce,
the MVP of the series, plus 2,200. Steve Pierce is my long shot pick.
Steve Pierce, it's my pleasure to present to you the Willie Mays World Series Most Valuable Player Trophy.
This is the DraftKings Fantasy Pick of the Night with Maz.
All right, I admit I'm in a little bit of a cold spell. A little bit of a cold spell, but we'll see if we can heat up. DraftKings Fantasy Pick of the Night brought to you by DraftKings. You play free fantasy baseball this season with the promo code BOSTON when you make your first deposit on DraftKings, leader in one-day fantasy baseball. Again, the code is BOSTON. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. So the goal here always is to try to find a lower-cost player that might be able to give you some sort of production that you wouldn't otherwise expect. So catcher's always a toughie because there just aren't that many catchers that can hit. So, but, you know, catchers are kind of a crapshoot, so you want to spend as little as possible. So here's what I'm going to offer up tonight. Just because I saw him during the Red Sox series, this kid for the Tigers, this guy for the Tigers, Grayson, is it Griner? Is that how you pronounce it? Do you guys know how to pronounce that? No idea. McCarthy's a seam head. Is it Grayson Griner?
I've literally never heard of that guy.
Okay, good. That's the idea. He's catching tonight against the White Sox, who are throwing a left-handed pitcher. This guy's performance against left-handed pitchers this year, pretty good. 818 OPS. He had a game against the Red Sox the other night. He went 2-for-3. Stick him in your lineup. See how it goes. And then fill out the rest with the Mike Trouts of the world and what have you. I did like a couple of Red Sox players tonight in fantasy. One was Andrew Benintendi, who hits Charlie Morton. But the game got rained out, so keep your eye on Benintendi for tomorrow. To me, that's a good one to keep an eye on. 617-779-0985. We'll take a couple of more calls here and then wrap it up before Murray gives you headlines at the top of the hour. And then is it Jones and Arcand tonight? Are they both in?
Yes.
Jones and Arcand, I think they have a full show and they got plenty to get to at this time of year. Josh is in New Hampshire. Josh, what do you got?
I think the front office needs to wake up and help this rotation out by signing Dallas Keuchel.
Okay, so look, I to me they could use a starting pitcher, although certainly they've been better of late, Josh. Do you think that they will do it? Now, never mind whether you want him. Tell me whether you think they would do it and why or why not.
I think they will because Nathan Eovaldi is out for a couple of months and I think that we can get Keuchel cheap instead of giving up someone big at the trade deadline.
Okay, so I don't think they are going to do it. I guess really that's it's as simple as that for me. I just, A, they have a payroll issue. So their payroll right now is around $240 million, maybe just a little under that. The luxury tax threshold is at $246. Keiko will put you over that. And then, you know, I suppose once you blow through that, you could certainly do whatever you want and add someone at the deadline. But I'd be surprised if the Red Sox go over that number, because I think they want to stay below it, particularly after winning the World Series last year. And then I won't even get to next season, where I think you're going to see the payroll come down quite a bit. The other thing is, and I should know this, but I don't, Dallas Keuchel, I think, was offered a qualifying offer by the Houston Astros, which means if you were to sign him now, you'd give up compensation. I don't think the Red Sox want to do that. You have to wait until June, I think, on those players in order to sign them and not give up compensation. So if you get to June and Eovaldi is still grinding along, because by then, in theory, he might be back, I still think it might be middle of June, even All-Star break, or early July before you see Eovaldi back. But nonetheless, if you were to get to a stage of the season where you could add Keuchel, and again, that's no earlier than June, if I remember all the dates right, then I think you wait until you're at least going to go with what you've got for another 6 weeks. So I wouldn't expect anything dramatic. The other thing is, again, the starting pitching lately has been better. So it is one of the areas that you look at with the Red Sox and you say, there's a direct correlation there, cause and effect. As soon as the starting pitching started to get better, the Red Sox started playing better. The finale in New York, Eovaldi went six innings, gave up one run. They lost the game 5-4, but they lost it on a grand slam late that Ryan Brazier gave up. And that was, I think it was in the seventh inning, that was caused largely by the ineffectiveness of Brandon Workman. So Eovaldi pitched well that night. You could have and should have won that game. And then really, since then, you've pretty much gotten a good start on every game, with the exception of Hector Velasquez in the doubleheader the other night against the Tigers. And Velasquez isn't really a member of your starting rotation. He's a fill-in guy. So you're going to hit and miss with Velasquez, but your other starters over that span, and it's a stretch covering seven starts, it's not 27 and it's not 70, but seven starts, the starter's ERA is 3.46. It's better. It's better. It's not perfect. It is certainly better. And so, to me, that's a step in the right direction. One other thing I meant to get to this week quickly. Did you guys see the other night that Eduardo Rodriguez credited Dustin Pedroia?
Oh, yes.
With teaching him a curveball?
Yeah. Just like, didn't he figure out a hitch with David Price a couple of years back?
He did. Like, that. Yeah. That there was a difference in his delivery, and Pedroia pointed out. Let me just tell you.
That's why they call him the little leader.
Okay, from experience, when a positional player on the DL starts giving pitchers advice, whether it works or doesn't, it usually means you're at the end of your career. Okay? It usually means you're at the end of your career. And when I say when you do it the way Pedroia did it, it's a bad sign. Because I've seen it before. I remember years ago it happened with Tim Wakefield and Mike Greenwell. It sticks out in my head. That Greenwell sat on the bench, he was on the DL, or he wasn't playing a lot, and the idea was, well, Greeny's pretty much done, and he was offering up tips, and then he argued for himself saying, I'm a veteran guy, I still can offer something to this team.
Yeah, you become a busybody.
Okay, so that's what happens, is that you spend a lot of time watching, and you actually end up, I'm not telling you the advice is a bad thing, I'm just telling you for the player, it's a bad sign. It means that you've sort of advanced into another stage of your career and you're probably done.
Well, Tony, he did this a few weeks ago when he was asking Jerry Remy about his knees.
So that too, right? That Remy was having difficulty walking walking into the ballpark at Yankee Stadium. He says always bugs him. Pedroia had to have a floor in his home swapped out. Like, tell me that's not scary. Because you had pain walking on the floor in your house at age 35 or whatever he is. Adam Jones coming up next with Christian Arcan. What do you got?
Oh, well, I just want to I just want to let you guys know, as a known hater, and I don't get the shame in being a hater. I don't understand why people are so, oh, you're a hater, like that's such a bad thing. No, I just I literally have enjoyment in other people's misery. I don't want to see other people do well. So I have been rooting openly against the Felger and Maz big board. I've been rooting against it very hard, and it's out of sheer jealousy. It's out of all the picks you guys have hit over the years, and I'm rooting very hard for it to go down on tonight, being day two, or round two, round three, That'll be through rounds 4, 5, 6, 7. I'll be rooting against the Felger and Maz big board, but I'm happy that in our Venn diagram we could overlap a little bit with N'Keal Harry. That's nice.
The board has great power, Jones. It's like the Ark of the Covenant.
Do you want to narrow yours? Do you have like a guy that you really like on the board that you want to see them take tonight out of your guys?
No.
No?
Anybody on the board's good.
Okay.
I'll trust the board.
We have 35 selections, so we're good.
Murray's got your headlines, Jones.
Did I hear another one get added today? I think I heard another one get added today.
A kicker.
Yeah, we did. We added a
36.
Kicker today.
36, excuse me. Yes, yeah.
I bet you they take him in like the 6th or 7th round. You watch. You watch, Jones. The board called to us and said, I want a kicker. That's what happened there. I'm assuming a lot of draft coverage.
All draft. Yes. We will not be talking about Josh Smith, the former Hawks forward who's supposed to be starting for the Red Sox. Yes. No.
All I needed was a yes. Murray's got your headlines. We'll see you next week. Everybody have a nice weekend.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.